Chairman Bagley to start when you choose.
Oh, my God, I love it.
And do you want to do one?
Oh, sure. I'm always happy to do this part. I'd like to call the Arizona State Board of Cosmetology January meeting.
Yes, welcome to the Arizona Barbering and Cosmetology Board meeting of January the 19th, 2024. I'd like to invite you to join me at the pledge of allegiance. And allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all. Thank you. All right, we'll do a roll call. Rosie's up there. Who's that man?
Heather.
Heather's in. That's right.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
We're doing a roll call. We'll call when you're ready.
Okay, for our board members in the room, we have Jerry Bagley.
Here.
Marshall Knapp.
Present.
Randy Flores.
Present.
Nick Goodman.
Present.
Trista Goodman. Glover.
Yeah. This is Tim Sedlaya.
But Tim, you need to wait until we call on you.
Okay.
Okay, and then on the phone, we have Tracy Wilkinson.
Here.
And then Chase Stern, kind.
Here.
Absent, we have Brandon McFadden. Then for board staff, we have Frank McGolly.
Present.
Kelly Shepherd.
Present.
Rosa Rodriguez.
Present.
Carlos Torres.
Present.
Isabella Legowski.
Present.
My spouse, Heather Santa Maria. We have Latisha Coleman.
Yes.
And then for investigator, we have Helen Bordelon.
Present.
Lisa Chavez.
Here.
Keegan McConnell.
Here.
Alexandra Hill.
Here.
Kathy Bergeron.
Present.
And then out front, we have Amelia Heredia checking everyone in, and I don't see Ray in here. Ray's in the back, Ray Devine, our IT project manager. And then legal counsel, virtually, we have Seamus Monahan.
Present, thank you.
That's all.
Thanks. All right, item three, board may vote to go into executive session to discuss personal matters pursuant to ARS 38431.03. Or to obtain legal advice pursuant to ARS 38431.03, sections A and 3. First item up below is discussion consideration, possible action approval of the regular board minutes for the December 15th, 2023 meeting. Do we have a motion regarding that matter?
The board members move that we accept the minute for the board meeting on December 15th, 2023.
All right, is there any discussion? Hearing none, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second, Marshall Knapp.
A motion and second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Right. Any opposed? Hearing no opposition, we pass that by majority. Next item up is board member declaration of conflicts of interest. Does any board member have a conflict of interest that came today?
No, not me.
Okay. Hearing no reaction, we will take position that no board member has a conflict in any case today. Third thing up is welcoming barber and cosmetology students and instructors. I see we have a few out there. Would you like to introduce yourselves and state the name of your school?
Gibby Community College, Amy Garfin. Gibby Community College, Kelly Little. Gibby Community College, Jennifer. Gibby Community College, Terry Major.
Well, you guys are nominated today. We appreciate your support. If you need a campaign, you go to school, tell them to get out of bed, get over here. You get more support. Good job on your part. All right, now we're going to move to the executive director report, number four. Frank.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I only do 9:05, so that gives me an extra few minutes this morning, right? Just kidding. Good morning, everyone. Pursuant to my normal monthly update for everybody. I will start with good news and announcement. Very, very, very good news. We achieved final board, or yeah, for NIC board approval to develop the hair design written practical and the instructor written practical. Currently, those tests are still hands-on, happening at various locations throughout the state. Very difficult for the testing company to find proctors to do those exams. Sometimes they get canceled because they're sick. So this is a huge win, and will put all of our practical examinations in that written practical format, which we have seen since that launched in May of 22, pretty decent success. Very good success. I won't even say decent, very good success, as we've seen from the monthly data time over time. So very, very good news. Timeline on that. They're telling me they're trying to do a rapid development of that they've prioritized it, but they've asked me not to give it any month sooner than the month of May for deployment of that. I love the idea of May because of all the graduations. I don't like the idea of the month of May because of all the graduations. I do think it could create just a little bit of difficulty in that transition period, but we'll work with both NIC, PCS, and ProMetric to ensure the smooth transition of that. As part of that, I ensured that the Spanish translation would also occur upfront so that we don't have that subsequent issue down the path that we had with the last round of written practicals. So all approved with NIC, and hopefully in the first half of this year, we'll get that off the ground. Employee engagement, as we have done, I know I shared with you all almost 2 years ago, the importance of employee engagement, morale, success of these teams. As I do every year, we do a midpoint survey from when the statewide employee engagement survey occurs. And I'm very happy to share that data with you. This morning on the screen, you will see that in 2022, the statewide survey actually launched the day I started. We had a 94% participation rate in our statewide survey. This year, we had a 77% participation rate. And our mid-year survey that we conducted in December, we had a 90% participation rate. Our overall engagement percentage in 2022 when I started was at 54%. And I'm very, very, very excited to share that we were at 90% in December this year. By way of reference, employee engagement, an organization is considered excellent when you're at 80% engagement or higher. So for us to have two consecutive employee engagement surveys above 80% and one of those being at 90% is an absolute incredible success. I'm so incredibly proud of this team turning that engagement around, and I truly and firmly believe that is why we are seeing the success we are as an organization. By way of comparison, state employees, so the 29,000 of us as state employees, was at 75% engagement in 2022 and 77% in 2023. So we are significantly higher from an organizational standpoint than our peers across all state agencies. The one specific question that I always try to keep some level of understanding on throughout is that one that says I'm satisfied with my job. And 2022, that was at 47%. In 23, it was at 83%. And it stayed the same in our midpoint survey in 2023. Statistically, that's actually really important to mention here. The fact that we were at 77% in our statewide survey in 23 at 83%, and the fact that we were at 90% response rate and still at 83% is very valid and very important. That is actually, even though it's the same number, I think it's a successful number because we actually received more responses. So that engagement would be higher. So very, very proud of that, that we continue to make, continue to improve upon. And I do want to point out, because we were at 85% in our 2023 survey, we actually didn't deploy any specific measures or countermeasures to improve our employee engagement this year. We just continued on the path that we were already on. So we didn't do any specific problem solving to that. So again, very, very proud of that. By way of staffing update, our licensing and customer care administrator position does remain posted at this time. In complete transparency, we have conducted some interviews, but no This permanent decisions have been made related to that position at this time. For our business and finance administrator position, I'm continuing to hold that one for now. I've taken on about 80% of those responsibilities myself and have been able to manage those. I do not intend to do that long term, but I'm trying to understand a number of functions so that I can fully assess what we truly need as an organization, both internally, what do we need for somebody to do that work, as well as our partnership with Central Services Bureau at ADOA. And I just have to give a public shout out to CSB. Over the last couple of months, they have been the utmost of partners. They have been incredible to work with, and they continue to work with us day in, partner with us, I should say, day in and day out to ensure that we're not missing anything and that we can continue to move our business and finance functions forward. For our financial update, we've rounded out the second full quarter of state fiscal year 24. Our appropriation was $750,000. Our expenses were $566,718, and our revenue was at $987,487. So our board fund, that larger, that overarching larger fund, sits at started the year at $15,370,000. And we're ending the year at we ended December at $15,852,000. As I've been sharing every month, this is a higher renewal year for us. So we are going to see the board fund increase this year. Even if I fully expend our appropriation amount, we're still going to see, just because it's our higher year. We did see a decrease last year of $100,000 to the board fund, but we got to do this. I'm keeping fairly close track of this, particularly considering current budget conversations going on across the street at both the governor's office as well as the legislature. And I'll have more on that in just a moment. But overall, through December, which is 50% of the year, we are approximately 53% expended to our full appropriation. As I've said months before, we had some very heavy expenses at the beginning of the year that have skewed that, but we continue to bring that down. And we might even next month, we might see that actually come into alignment percentage-wise. Also, in your electronic files is a full copy of those financials so that you can see those should you wish. Testing data. Speaking of the written practical examinations for the month of December, we had 373 candidates test in that written practical format with an 83% average passing rate. You can see the breakdown of all of the test types there. We did see an increase in the number of Spanish written practicals taken last month. So I think we're starting to finally see an increase in those numbers. I was actually really worried at first because we went gung-ho to make that happen and then nobody was utilizing it. So I'm happy to see that those numbers are slowly increasing. We have five currently. I should say, as of January 16th, we have 532 candidates that have scheduled a date to test from January 16th, and we had one person that is already scheduled for December 30th of this year. So they are assuming or planning to graduate in December. I want to make sure they can get that written practical taken. So I do think that's one of the huge pros to the process that we have, is that you can schedule it that far in advance. Of the 532, 226 of those are written practicals. One Cosmo, one Aesthetics, one Barber, and one Nail Tech have registered to take that written practical in Spanish. The remaining 306 are for the theory-based test. By way of a licensing update for the month of December, we received 341 new exam applications. 159 of those were approved with an approval time frame of 5 days. Again, our target's at 14 days, and we did, for some reason, we had a large number of incomplete new exam applications for the month of December. We're going to keep track of that this month to see if that number continues to be high, to see if there's a problem in the process, but that is unusually high for our new exam applications to have an incomplete application. There can be any number of reasons why, which we won't get into today. Our establishment applications, we received 128, 50 of those were approved with a 9-day average turnaround. Again, that target's 14 days, and we had 78 incomplete. On our reciprocity applications, we received 166. 106 of those were approved, and we were right at the 14-day mark on that. And there's a lot of reasons why, and I fully expect that that number will actually, that average turnaround will come down a little bit this month. And again, we had 60 incomplete applications there. Our customer care team, we received 1,918 phone calls in the month of December with an average wait time of 7 minutes and 12 seconds and an average handle time of 5 minutes and 20 seconds for a total interaction time of 12 minutes and 32 seconds where we're targeting. We really want that. Like my crazy goal there is 10 minutes. December was a tough month. We had a lot of calls. We were down a customer service rep. So we know the reasons why. We fixed those reasons for this month, and we will hopefully get that back around this month. Additionally, we had 625 emails come into the inbox, and we had a less than 24 business hour response time. I was asked to make sure that I clarify business hours because we're not working to answer those emails on the weekends, to be very candid. Our compliance update, we received 80 consumer complaints. Only 15% of those are within our jurisdiction, meaning only 15% of those are anything that we would even be able to investigate. And those were assigned to an investigator to conduct that investigation. On top of that, our team did conduct 326 routine inspections, and of that, there was an 85% satisfactory or compliance rate to the rules. And the team conducted 21 investigations on top of that, and we had a member of the team who did inspections in Casa Grande this month. Rulemaking update. I don't really have a rulemaking update. It remains in the governor's office hand. We have, we are on our third policy advisor in 12 months. I did have a good meeting with our latest policy advisor last week. I reiterated the importance of this. I showed her the governor's regulatory review council timeline and that if we miss the January 23rd deadline for submission to GIRC, we will be in another month behind on getting onto the GIRC calendar. All of these dates back by almost 60 days. It's kind of a weird calendar and how it all works. So at this point, we are clearly not on the January GIRC meeting. We are not on the February GIRC meeting. At best, we would be on the GIRC meeting the first week of March. And then if we obtain approval the first week of March, the Secretary of State's office has 60 days. So we're really looking at May as a possibility of implementation of the new rules. But I've not gotten any indication of whether we will make the January 23rd date or not. Next up, I've got the 2024 legislative update. The legislative session did begin last Monday, and boy, did it start with a bang. On Monday, immediately first thing in the morning, House Bill 2169 was introduced by Representative Dunn to consolidate the massage therapy board with the barbering and cosmetology board. I definitely have more gray hair as a result of the introduction of this bill. It has gone through already its first and second reading in the legislative process. It has been assigned to the government committee. It has been placed on next Wednesday's government committee agenda. However, I received an email like 9:30 last night from the policy advisor saying that won't actually be on next week's agenda. They're pulling it because the agenda is too long. So I will keep the board updated on anything that comes from that. I plan to be in the room, but clearly will not speak inappropriately. Additionally, last week on Friday at 3 p.m., the governor released her proposed budget and it's not good. Not good for, just to be clear, it's not good for us. I don't need to get into philosophical conversations about the bigger budget, but for barbering and cosmetology, it's not good. Not only did she not include our request that we made earlier last year, she's actually clawing back 200, proposing to claw back $200,000 that was added last year. And if that happens, we are going to be in a very bad spot budgetarily. I fully recognize it's only a proposal at this point, but it is going to make for some very interesting things. And I fear some backslide in our work if and when that occurs. And so we will actively prepare and continue to watch that. But it doesn't look good for us, at least in proposal state. Final item is the board's legislative request. If you recall, the board approved a slate of legislative changes at the November board meeting. That hasn't been introduced yet. I have been working with Representative Dunn, policy advisor, who they're very interested in this. They liked it. They had two questions for us last week. One was about it was kind of funny. They're like, oh, it looks like you're trying to regulate eyelash extensions. And we had to point out to them that they passed a bill last year putting regulation in place for eyelash extensions. And they're like, oh, okay. Shared that information with them. And then the second piece was related to the fees associated with the eyelash registration and some Prop 108, which I got information last night, but I haven't been able to dig into it, about increasing state revenue. And they might, depending on how it gets written, it could have a higher threshold to pass out of chambers and blah, 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 blah. So she is working on figuring out how to put language in there, because we're allowed to charge a fee if we're going to issue a license or a registration. But the fear is, do they then have to get two-thirds support to make that happen? So they're working on crafting that language and trying to figure out if there's a way they can get around that. But there does seem to be appreciation and approval of these legislative changes. So we'll continue to track that. Timeline is not in our favor right now on that, because I think the bill would have to be introduced next week in order to meet timeline. So I'm not 100% sure. As of first thing this morning, it hasn't been introduced yet, I guess is how I will round that out. Finally, next up is our next sixth meeting, February 16th, 2024 at 9 a.m. And I am looking forward to seeing all of you then. With that, I will turn it back to you, Mr. Chair, although we are going to move into our annual board member conflict of interest training. We are required to do that annually. This is the second time since I've been here. So Assistant Attorney General Moynihan is here this morning to present the information to you all. And in your packets on the left-hand side is a memo on ex parte communications and the importance of the confidentiality of ex parte communications, as well as that's from the Attorney General's office, as well as your actual declaration of conflicts of interest form. For those, Chase and Tracy, who have joined us virtually, Heather will be sending out an Adobe sign form for you all to complete and sign that declaration of your conflicts of interest. And one final point, staff are also required to do this, and we completed that last week. So with that, with your permission, Mr. Bagley.
One more question.
Yep.
Of your report, there were two things I was wondering about. One, if we're moving towards absorbing the massage board, which it appears so, how many massage people are we talking about?
My current understanding is there are approximately 10,000 massage therapy licensees in the state of Arizona.
Okay.
So a little less than 10% of our current licensee base.
And the other question I had related to the eyelashes, we know that while I was staff last year, do we have an enactment yet?
So at this point, Mr. Chair, members of the board, we are awaiting the regulations to allow us to implement. So that's all wrapped up in that rule making piece.
Oh, it's just that.
Yes.
It's anchor. Oh, okay.
So that May timeline that I was referencing is that's what it's currently looking like.
All right. Well, I'm not happy. Let's move into some training from our team.
All right, Seamus, we're turning it over to you. And if you just want to say next slide, I can advance the slide for you.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you. Thank you very much, Frank. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Thank you for your time today, everybody. If you would please just bear with me a little. I'm a little under the weather today, but we should get through this just fine. So today we're going to talk about conflicts of interest. And one of the things that comes along with conflicts of interest is going to be recusals. So we're going to start with recusals because I'm an end game kind of guy, and I like to see where things are going to go. So I'm going to start with recusals, and then I'll kind of back up and talk more about conflicts generally. But just to kind of lay the framework here, when it comes to conflicts of interest, the AG's office is always available. We're always there to help you. If you ever feel like you maybe have a conflict, feel free to reach out to Frank or myself, and I'd be happy to talk that through with you to see if you, you know, to see if you really have a conflict, or, you know, if you feel that you can still dispose of a matter or vote on a matter with being impartial, you know, in light of that potential conflict. I'm never going to tell you you have to recuse. That's not the AG's job. We're going to lay the facts out for you. We're going to talk it through with you, and we're going to talk best practices and, you know, the best way to keep yourself out of trouble and the board out of trouble. Because one of the biggest issues with conflicts of interest is if they're not declared and you happen to vote on a matter, especially if you vote for discipline, then there's always the potential that you could be found personally and civilly liable, if not maybe even criminally liable, depending on the actions you take and how egregious they are. But just to remember, just to frame it that, you know, conflicts are yours, you own them. And if you believe that you have an issue and you think that it may imperil the board's decision, then, you know, I would just request that you reach out again to me or Frank. And another thing to remember is that conflicts of interest aren't necessarily a legal issue. So it's not necessarily appropriate to call for an executive session to request advice on a potential conflict you have. So if you do have that conflict, do the groundwork before the meeting, even if it's right before the meeting. You can always pull me aside or Frank aside and say, hey, what do you think about this? So I just want to frame it that way. I'm not going to get into a lot of hypotheticals today because sometimes it's hard to, you know, pregame, and you end up Monday morning quarterbacking these decisions. So I don't entertain a lot of hypotheticals in the training, but I am always available. So, you know, if you need to reach out to me, even if I can't give you legal advice, I'll tell you, I won't advise you on this, but I'm always here to listen to you. So with that, let's get started. Next slide. Did it say introduction?
Yep, you're good.
Okay. So introduction. This presentation consists of two primary elements. Directives based on state law and recommendations derived from years of practical experience representing state licensing boards. That's my experience, but that's also the shoulders of the people that I stand on and came before me, people that you've met before, Mark Harris, Gene Galvin, very, very, very learned, very good lawyers who have spent a lot of time in this space. And a lot of this information comes from their years of practical experience. Next slide. As I stated, I was going to start with recusals. So to recuse means to remove oneself from participation to avoid a conflict of interest or other impermissible circumstance. The recused member is disqualified on that matter. No discussion, no vote, nothing. That means please do not reach out to board staff. I know sometimes you may feel that, you know, you're personally invested in a matter, or you're very emotional about it, but your emotional investment itself may be a conflict that you know warrants possible recusal if you don't think that you can be impartial when deciding that matter. So again, there's no vote, no discussion, no nothing. If you accidentally receive the materials, please do not read them. You know, you're kind of on an honor code there. The staff will do everything that they can, but they can't anticipate every recusal unless it's, you know, on the record prior to. Recused members should leave the table. This one's always kind of contentious, but when you're recused, the easiest thing to do to signal to the group that you're not going to be participating and to kind of get rid of that appearance of impropriety is to get up and either sit in the galley with everybody else or, you know, use the restroom. But whatever you do, just make sure you're back away from the table and it doesn't look like you're participating even though you're recused. Recusal is mandatory for statutory conflicts of interest and for bias, prejudice, and prejudgment. And we'll get into what's the difference between a statutory conflict and a potential conflict for bias, prejudice, and prejudgment. Next. The recusal for conflict of interest. By law, board members who have a conflict of interest under the Arizona Conflict of Interest Statutes must recuse themselves from discussion and voting. Consult the board's attorney for advice before the meeting begins. Penalties for violating conflict of interest laws include criminal prosecution. And I don't need to explain to you, you're all very intelligent people, but it's really about clarity and transparency when you're doing your work. And so that's what the conflict of interest law get at. And again, I'm not going to tell you that you have to recuse, but if you have a statutory conflict in the sense that, you know, let's say this person is a member of your family or your employer, that's going to be a statutory conflict. You are conflicted by law. And in that case, you know, it's best to recuse yourself because that's a situation in which, you know, if somebody were to file a complaint, that's a very easy case to have, right? It's a very easy case to dispose of. You have a clear conflict. It's in the statute and you did not recuse yourself when you took action on that matter. you will notice that I would really encourage you, that memo has been years in the making. I think it's been around since 2016 and it's built upon and refined. And so that memo you have in front of you is really, I mean, that is really the gold standard for, you know, how to look at your conflicts, how to analyze any potential issues you may have. And again, consult me. I'm always here for you. That's my job. And I'll help you in any way that I can. And then again, you know, conflict of interest laws, violating those conflict of interest laws can include civil penalties or criminal prosecution. But even more importantly, it puts any decision you make into peril and could be appealed. It could be brought back to the board. Either way, it's going to make for a messy situation. Next slide. The statutory conflict of interest is a matter in which you have a substantial interest in the board decision. A board member who has or whose relative has a substantial interest in any decision by the board has a conflict of interest. Interest must be disclosed and board member disqualified from participating in any manner in that decision. Well, I think a very, you know, not, I said I don't like to entertain hypotheticals. I'm gonna make myself a little bit of a liar here. I think an easy one is you have a financial interest in a school or a salon that comes before the board or a barbershop. That's an easy one. That's one that you're gonna wanna recuse on because you have a clear pecuniary interest in ensuring that decision goes well for that entity. Substantial interest means any pecuniary or proprietary interest, either direct or indirect, other than a remote interest. A remote interest could be, you know, a second cousin that you don't see very often is the one who owns that school. Is that a remote interest? Possibly you may have an interest in that. Aunt or uncle owns it. Maybe you have an interest, a remote interest somewhere in there. But if it's not definable, if it's not concrete, then it may not be something that you need to recuse on. And in that instance, I would appreciate it if you would call me and we could talk it through. Relative under the statute is defined as spouse, child, parent, grandparent, sibling, or in-law of the member. Disqualification is mandatory when a member has a statutory conflict of interest. And just to make you feel a little bit better, you know, these aren't nebulous things that we're talking about. You have in front of you today a conflict sheet. Pretty much any substantial interest that you're going to have, you're going to place down on that conflict sheet, and you're going to know ahead of time, board's going to know ahead of time. So that's the purpose of filling out that sheet, is that it helps not only the board and the public, but it helps you identify where you may have a substantial interest. Next slide. So this is just kind of procedurally for that recusal. At the time the agenda item is called, the board member with the conflict of interest should immediately ask to be recognized and then announce the recusal. For example, Madam Chair, I recuse myself on this matter because I have a conflict of interest. I don't think it's always necessary that you state on the record specifically what that conflict is, especially if you've got it in writing and provided that to the board. But it is important that you announce that you do have a conflict of interest in the matter. The converse to that, there may be a situation in which you know an individual, but you don't have any interest, pecuniary or proprietary, and you feel that regardless of knowing this individual, which you will have a lot of people before you that you've come into contact with before, maybe you go golfing with, but if you can keep, if you can be impartial in your decision making, then, you know, it may be appropriate for you to just say, look, I don't have a conflict, but I do know this individual. And for the purposes of the record and being transparent, I want to state that I believe that I can be impartial regardless of knowing this individual. Next slide. To make clear that the member is recused and to avoid temptation, he or she should leave the board table and sit in the audience. Again, that's just an appearance of impropriety and transparency. It's good for the people of the public to see the board following the same rules that, you know, the board holds the public to. No gesturing, grimacing, shrugging, sighing, shaking of the head, etc., from the back of the room. I don't need to go any further on that. I don't expect anybody on this board to engage in that behavior. Next slide. And this is, we get into more of the, these are more of the nebulous issues here. Circumstances that effectively hinder or prevent a board member from deciding a matter fairly on the basis of its own circumstances is impermissible. And remember that the gold standard is people who come before the board expect the board to make a decision based on only the facts in front of them in their report, not facts that you've gleaned from anywhere else. And part of that is also because it's important that no board member has more information than another board member on a certain matter. Everybody should be playing from the same table, from the same slate. Again, so bias, prejudice, or prejudgment. If you come to a meeting and you've already decided, I don't like this person, I don't care what the facts are, you know, they've gotten in trouble enough, I'm gonna go after them. That's impermissible. And at that point, in order to take yourself and the board out of the line of fire, you should think about recusing yourself. And it's absolutely okay to prejudge a case. Now, I wouldn't want you to get into the situation where you're doing this all the time, but we are humans. We have human emotions, and sometimes we feel emotionally about a case. I'm not going to tell you that you can't feel emotional or have prejudices. What I am going to ask, though, is if you feel those bubbling to the surface, you take a step back and you think, is this a case I should be making a decision on? Or have I already corrupted the process because of my own internal thinking? Again, same with bias and prejudice. If you've already come into the meeting thinking that this is what needs to happen to this person because of something that's not in the facts or not supported by the facts, then that should be a reason to recuse. Next slide. Board members should disqualify themselves from discussion and voting if they have strong feelings about the facts of a matter in dispute that will influence their opinions, regardless of the evidence. The facts in dispute are the who, what, where, when, why, and how of a particular board matter. Next slide. A board member who disqualifies himself or herself on this basis, or themselves, should announce his non-participation immediately when the matter is called and should leave the table. For example, Mr. Chairman, I will not be participating in this matter. If you have already prejudged a matter, I certainly wouldn't expect that you would say, I'm recusing myself because I have really strong feelings and I've already decided what I think needs to happen. I think it's just appropriate that you say, you know, I'm not going to be participating in this matter and I'll recuse myself. And if you want to discuss that with anybody, you can. If you want to keep it to yourself, that's fine. Again, another hypothetical. Sometimes respondents sue the board. Sometimes respondents sue board members. That's not a reason to recuse yourself from a matter, especially if the civil case is not ongoing. But it may lead you to have very strong feelings about the individual, the respondent who's there before you. Again, that's a situation where you're going to want to consider is the fact that I feel impugned by their potential civil suit. Is that going to affect the way that I decide on this case because I'm angry with this individual? Again, that's something that you're going to want to think about. I don't expect you to put that on the record, but I would expect that you just recuse yourself and state that you're recusing yourself and that you're not going to decide on this matter. Next slide, please. Voluntary recusal. Even if a board member believes that he has no they have no actual basis or prejudice about specific facts in a particular case, they should consider the appearance of fairness and disqualify themselves. The participation may give the appearance of impropriety. And again, I think everybody understands the appearance of impropriety is simply the appearance to the public that there's something nefarious going on. There's something rotten in Denmark, right? And so basically, you know, creating those situations where you could show that you are transparent and, you know, you put matters on the record for the public to hear, that builds trust between you and the public. It shows that the board members are taking their job seriously. Next slide. The following circumstances alone generally do not constitute an appearance of impropriety and board members should not recuse. So this is where I'm going to kind of pull the reins in a little bit and ask that even if you think that, you know, you may have a recusal and you may need to recuse, recusal is not the avenue we want to go down unless we have to. These decisions are tough. They involve people's livelihood. There's going to be times when you don't know what to do, and you don't know if it's right to make a decision and dispose of somebody's license or get rid of somebody's license. But essentially, that's why you're here. And I don't need to tell you that. I know you know that. So, you know, if you don't have a statutory conflict, if you are not prejudiced or biased, if you haven't prejudged the matter, you know, you should be voting on the matter, not recusing yourself, because decisions can be hard, and I understand that. But being acquainted with the licensee, being a member of the same professional association as the licensee, serving on committees with the licensee, I think you've all noticed once you get on these boards, you're going to run into people that you know, and you're going to run into people that you see. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you need to recuse yourself from a matter. And again, if you want to talk about that, if it's a golf buddy you see all the time and you feel maybe you're prejudiced or biased and you want to talk about it, I'm always there for that too. Next slide. So recusal's little brother is the abstention. To abstain means the board member declines to vote. In the absence of a reason for mandatory recusal or a genuine appearance of impropriety, board members have a duty to decide matters that come before them. For example, members should not abstain merely because a matter is controversial, difficult to decide, or involves a particular person or issue. And a lot of times, you know, an abstention comes when a board member has to use the restroom or gets a, you know, an emergency personal phone call during a meeting or loses reception when they're virtual and you don't hear a majority or part of a case, and what you don't hear is essential to making a decision, that's when you're going to want to abstain. Those are perfect circumstances to abstain under because you haven't heard the whole discussion, you haven't heard all the facts and circumstances, and so you are essentially trying to make a decision with one arm tied behind your back. And in those situations, if you've missed a majority of it, I would request that, you know, you just abstain. But again, I'm not going to tell you you have to, and I will leave that up to you. Next slide. Valuable things or benefits. Board members may not use their membership to obtain any valuable thing or valuable benefit that would not ordinarily accrue to the board member in the performance of his or her duties. If such a thing or benefit is of such character as to manifest a substantial and improper influence upon him or her with respect to his or her duties. I think that's pretty straightforward. Don't accept gifts from anybody. Don't accept gifts from me. Don't accept gifts from anybody you work with here on the board. Just don't accept gifts, period. Next slide. My role. So my role is to provide the board legal advice, to ensure the board complies with statutes and rules, to ensure meetings are conducted in compliance with the open meeting law, and to conduct your formal hearings pursuant to statute and notions of fairness and due process. As I stated, I'm always here for you. Whatever you need, even if I can't help you, I'm still going to listen to you. That's my job. And if you have any questions, please feel free to reach out to me at any time. Next slide. My job is not to hamper or impede board business, but help guarantee it is done lawfully. I don't direct policy. I don't even weigh in on policy. I don't give legal advice on policy. When advice is given during a board meeting, is for the protection of the board. I'm generally going to do that in executive session. I'm legal counsel of the board, not to individual members, not to the staff. I am the counsel to the board as a whole. And so anytime that I give you advice or we discuss a matter, I'm always going to be thinking about that matter in the realm of what's best for the board and what protects the board's and its interests best. So if you have any questions with that, I'm always happy to discuss that too. And then in conclusion, be prepared, be fair, and you cannot help but do good works. Again, please review that memo. The memo really has all the important information in there. And like I've said a million times, if you have any questions about it, please reach out to me. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. Good training.
So Mr. Chair, members of the board, tactically, as we referenced, I referenced at the beginning of this, you do have your annual conflict of interest declaration form. It was in the last pocket. If you could please fill that out during the meeting. I'm actually going to pass around the payroll right now too, so if you just want to put your signed form in with that, Heather will collect those. Member Turrentine, member Tracy, I can't remember your new last name. I apologize. Heather will be sending out an Adobe signed form for you to sign. Oh, you're already signed, it sounds like. So thank you.
You got it.
We will keep those on file for your annual declaration, and we will do this same activity 1 year from now. With that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it back to you for number six.
Yeah, looks like we're up to the consent agenda.
Yep.
All right. Now,
Step 1A, recommended dismissal. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, all cases listed under Step 1A, recommended dismissals have been reviewed according to board parameters, and we would ask the board to consider staff recommendations or take other non-disciplinary action.
Okay, do we have any discussion on anything in 6A? Any questions about it? Okay.
No, but Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'd make a motion to accept staff recommendations in Step 6A, recommended dismissal. I would second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Anyone opposed? All right, unanimously, then we accept staff recommendation. Thank you very much.
Step 1B, recommendations for non-disciplinary concern. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, all cases listed under Step 1B, recommended non-disciplinary concerns, have been reviewed according to board parameters, and we would ask the board to consider staff recommendations or take other non-disciplinary actions.
Any questions from the board on any of the cases within Step 6B? Any discussion required?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move to accept staff recommendation for step 6B, recommended non-disciplinary letter of concern for all cases listed. Glover, second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Unanimously, we accept staff recommendation of that group.
Step 1C, recommended informal interview with negotiation firm. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, all cases listed under step 1C, recommendation for informal interview with negotiation firms, have been reviewed according to board's parameters, and we would ask the board to consider staff recommendations or take up the non-disciplinary action.
Do we have any questions about any cases that 6B? Any discussion that board members would like to have about any of these cases?
No discussion from me. Mr. Chairman, Member Flores would make a motion to accept staff recommendation for step 6C, recommend informal interview or negotiation for all cases. Glover, second.
Motion and second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimously, we accept all those.
Part of the right.
Okay. All right, I bring this to number seven.
Mr. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Guy, number seven, we'll consider the cases in A first. This one.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, we do have one Barbara Reciprocity applicant that staff member Lakeisha Coleman will be presenting to you for a decision.
Good morning, Mr. Bagley, members of the board. Today I will be presenting the Department of Labor's application for Mr. Adam Gannon. Mr. Gannon has provided all required documents needed to complete his application. Those documents include a 300 PR report, his school transcripts, as well as his rental completion certification form from Ontario, which does prove showing licensure. So today I do ask with those documents that are we going to approve or deny licensure for Mr. Gaddy today? If you do have any further questions about the information given, I'll be happy to answer them. That does conclude my presentation. Thanks for your
time. The question, have you reviewed this and do you feel comfortable?
Yes.
All right, well, I have confidence in you, so from that standpoint. Do we have any questions? Any questions?
Glover would move that we grant licensure to applicants.
The motion is second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? You know, so we accept that. Thank you for your good work. We appreciate you.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, that does bring us to item number 8, which was time limited to begin at 10 a.m. So we will need to take a quick recess.
Right. All right. Well, that happened. Then we will go into recess for the 10 minutes.
Be back to 10.
We'll stay next to the 10.
All right.
All right. Feel free to walk about the campus.